This evening, we're going to continue our lessons on evidences, and tonight we're going to talk about the Genesis account of creation. I encourage you to come and to be with us at that hour if possible. Last week, we began looking at some wisdom in the book of Proverbs, particularly wisdom as it relates to our relationships. We said the book of Proverbs was referred to by the rabbis as a book of wisdom. And you only have to go to the first few verses to see exactly the purpose which this book has been written. When it said in verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple and to the young man knowledge and discretion. Lord Solomon said, here this book is written that it may make us wise. We may be simple, we may be young, and yet we can have the wisdom that comes from God about how to treat people, how to be the proper kind of husband, the proper kind of wife, the proper kind of friend, if we'll just simply look at the wisdom contained in the book of Proverbs. Now, last week we talked about our relationship to God because our relationship to God is really the basis of all other relationships. And we have to realize that when God says something, it's right. True wisdom comes from the Lord. It doesn't matter what any expert says. It doesn't matter whether I agree with it or not. If God gives me wisdom about how to deal with angry people, then that's true wisdom. That's how I need to do it. God tells me as a husband, this is my responsibility, and here's how I need to treat my wife, then that's true wisdom, regardless of what anybody else might have to say about it. And so relationship to God is the foundation and the starting point of all other relationships. But if there's another relationship that is going to vastly affect our relationship to others, it is our relationship to self. That if we don't have the proper attitude and the proper view of self, then I really can't have the proper relationship with others. And so I want to look at what the Bible says in the book of Proverbs about how we need to view ourselves and control ourselves in the lesson this morning. As we begin to think about wisdom from the book of Proverbs about self, one of the very first words of advice that's found frequently in the book of Proverbs is that we can't think too highly of ourselves. In other words, pride will ruin any other relationship. Pride will ruin the relationship with friends and with family. It'll ruin our relationships in the church. And so we must learn not to think too highly of ourselves. What is pride? Well, pride is an over-high opinion of oneself, an exaggerated self-esteem or conceit. That's one definition of pride. Now, pride is not always used in a negative way. Sometimes it is used in the sense of one's own dignity or worth, a self-respect. You ever heard somebody say, well, you know, I have some pride. And, you know, the idea is I've got some amount of self-respect and I realize my dignity and my worth. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think the Bible would say that we need to realize that as people that are made in the image of God, we have value and we have worth. We need to behave in such a way that reflects on the fact that we're trying to walk worthy of the gospel of Christ. That's not the kind of pride we're talking about. We're talking about that over-high opinion, that exaggerated self-esteem. But when it becomes exaggerated, as we said, sinful things result. And so that kind of pride is a sin. Pure and simple, thinking too highly of yourself or this overly exalted view to where sometimes I can do no wrong, where I'm not going to listen to others. I can't admit mistakes and faults that I have. That kind of attitude is sinful and it's wrong. In fact, look at some of the Proverbs with me. Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 4 said, a haughty look and a proud heart and the plowing of the wicked are sin. Think about somebody's look. You ever seen somebody when you look at them and they just look like they have an overly exalted opinion of themselves. They carry themselves with a degree, we would say, of arrogance. They've got that haughty look about them. And I tell you, the haughty look grows out of a proud heart. It grows out of their thinking. And what the Lord said, that's sin. Proverbs 21 and verse 4. In Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 13, Agur there in the book of Proverbs chapter 30 talks about a generation here that is pure in its own eyes, and it doesn't respect its parents. But listen to what he said down in verse 13. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. And he goes on and he describes some of the other things about that generation. But you know, when you have a generation that doesn't listen to their parents, and they're pure in their own eyes, and they don't wash themselves of all their uncleanness, I think one thing that Agur is putting out here in this passage is that the heart of it is often pride. In other words, a young person that thinks they know more than anybody else. And so they don't have to listen to mom or dad or Bible class teacher or the teacher at school. In fact, in describing why may I need the gospel and the list of all of the sins of Romans 1, you had homosexuality and adultery and those kind of things that we oftentimes think, oh, what terrible sins they are. And they are. All sins terrible. But right in the midst of that are things like backbiters and haters of God and the violent and the proud. And the Lord said about those things that those that do such things are worthy of death. And so pride is a sin. Not only is pride a sin, pride is something that will destroy our lives. It leads to other things. In fact, what pride does, when I have this overly exalted opinion of myself, when I have haughty eyes, what the Bible would tell me it'll do is it'll stir up strife. You know, a proud person is pretty hard to get along with. In Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 25, he who is proud of heart stirs up strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will be prospering. Now, if I'm proud and you're proud, then you know what's going to happen eventually? There's going to be conflict. Probably if one of us is proud, there's going to be conflict. But certainly when you deal with two proud people who think they can do no wrong, who think they're wiser and smarter than anybody else that they talk to, you know what's going to happen? There's going to be conflict. Whether it's in the home, whether it's in the church, whether it's at the workplace, it leads to strife. It brings contention, Proverbs chapter 13 and in verse 10. By pride comes nothing but contention or strife, but the well-advised, there is wisdom. Now, one of the styles of the Proverbs, you can sort of break it down by different styles. Some of them are just simply a statement of truth. Some of them are what we call opposites. It'll say, this is true with regard to the fool, but the wise is this way. I want you to notice in that particular passage, he said, by pride comes nothing but strife, but with the well-advised is wisdom. I want you to notice the contrast. The contrast is between somebody that's well-advised and somebody that's proud. And the implication of that proverb is somebody that is proud is going to be contented because they don't seek wisdom, do they? They don't listen. They're not well advised because they already know everything. They already know the answers. Now, look in the book of Proverbs chapter 14 and verse, it calls one to be self-willed. In other words, it's about me and it's about my way. It leads to sinful speech, Proverbs 14 and in verse 3. In the mouth of a fool is a rod of pride, but the lips of wise will preserve them. You see over and over again what pride will do in any relationship. Let me say this. One reason pride comes is when I don't have that relationship to God that I talked about last week. See, when I have the proper relationship to God and I fear Him and I recognize that true wisdom comes from Him and I need Him, then that ought to humble me. It ought to cause me to recognize that wisdom doesn't reside inherently with me. It comes from the Lord. He has the answers, not me. And so when I realize my relationship to Him, and it's one of fear, and it's one of humility, and it's one of listening to God, then pride is going to be eliminated. So the two go hand in hand. But when I think about how dangerous pride is, I want you to realize how dangerous it is according to the book of Proverbs. In fact, pride is so dangerous that the Bible said if you had a choice between being poor or being arrogant, it's better off that you're poor. I don't know a person among us that would like to be poor. We enjoy having material things and we want to have enough to provide for our family. But he said in Proverbs 16 and verse 19, better to be of humble spirit with the lowly than divide the spoil with the proud. In other words, if you had a choice between being proud or being poor, you're better off being poor. A poor person can go to heaven. A poor person can serve the Lord, but one that is proud can't do that. And there may also be that warning, by the way, Proverbs 16 and verse 19, about poverty versus riches as it relates to pride, because sometimes the better off we do materially, the more lifted up we can become in our own eyes. In other words, we get to thinking, look at what all I've done, look at what I've accomplished, look at what I possess, and so we get this over-elevated view. That's not always the case. We can't look at somebody that has a great deal of material and say, well, now they must be proud. There are many individuals throughout the Bible that possessed a great deal. They were very humble individuals. Abraham and Job and others possessed a great deal. But the Lord warned the people of Israel, be careful what you come into the land and then you become lifted up because of what we possess. It is better to be humble and poor than it is to be arrogant and divide the spoil with others that are rich. You know how bad it is to be proud? It's more hope for the fool than that. In Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 12, do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. None of us would like to be identified as a fool. And the book of Proverbs uses that repeatedly. And it never uses it in a positive way. And we realize there is absolutely no hope at all for a fool. And yet what this passage says, there's more hope for a fool than there is for the proud. You know what that's God's way of saying? The proud has absolutely no hope at all of being saved and being pleasing to the Lord. In fact, how many times through the Scriptures do you remember the Bible telling us that God is going to destroy the proud? I don't know how many Bible passages there are that make that point. I've never taken the time to count them all. But I do know the Bible repeatedly emphasizes that God's going to destroy the proud. Look at Proverbs 15:25. The Lord will destroy the house of the proud, but He will establish the boundary of the widow. Here's a widow, by the way, that by that day's standards was considered about as low as you could get. And yet He said God will take care of that widow, but God will destroy the house of the proud. No doubt if anybody was to look, they'd say, I tell you what, I'd rather be in that person's house over. Look at all they've got. Look, and this widow, I wouldn't want to be in her spot. And yet what this Bible passage is saying, you're really better off to be in her situation than you are in the situation of a proud. Proverbs 16 and verse 5. Everyone proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though they join forces, none will go unpunished. The abomination to God, something God hates. God hates a proud look. That's the passage that Benjamin read for us. These six things the Lord hates, yea, seven are an abomination to Him. One of those things was the proud or the arrogant look. And this passage is simply emphasizing, again, that there's no hope. What if all the proud people in the world join forces? We get arm in arm and we're going to fight. It doesn't matter what he said. They're not going to go unpunished even if they were to join forces with one another. Proverbs 16 and verse 18, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. And this passage is not just telling us that God is going to destroy them, but He's going to tell us that we're going to fall ourselves with pride. I think it goes back to the same point Paul made to the brethren at Corinth, 1 Corinthians 10:13. Therefore let him who thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Arrogance and pride will set us up because we think we're invulnerable to sin and to temptation and to wickedness. Proverbs 18 and verse 12, before destruction the heart of man is haughty and before honor is humility. I mean, how often do we see this over and over again? God will destroy the proud and it'll bring you low. A man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor. And so when I begin to think, first of all, what attitude do I need to possess about myself or toward myself? The first thing is I've got to learn to be humble. And I can't learn to have an over-elevated opinion of myself that I don't need to listen to others. Whether it is my family, whether it is the wisdom of others in the workplace, whether it is the wisdom of others in the church. If I have that kind of opinion, I'm setting myself up for destruction. I'll ruin every relationship that I have, and I'm going to be destroyed. And God eventually is going to bring me low. I tell you what, I'd rather be low now and be exalted in the end than I had to exalt myself now and be brought low in the end. And that's what the Lord said. Remember in Luke chapter 18 and verse 14, I tell you, this man down to his house justified rather than the other. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. So I've got to learn to see myself as I really am, my weaknesses as well as my strengths, and learn to treat others with humility. And if I don't start with that, then I tell you, when we get to other relationships, we're not going to possibly be able to build them in the right way. But there's something else I've got to learn to do. And that is, I have to learn that I've got to control myself. And my relationship to self is such that I get a proper view of myself, but then I've got to learn some control of self. In fact, the greatest enemy that all of us have outside the devil would be self, and learning to control self. I sometimes tell my children when we talk, when they might say, "Well, somebody did this." Usually, it's one of the other ones, but that did something. You know, or so-and-so said this, and I try to make the point that we have no control over what others do, but we have every bit of control over what I do and how I respond to things. There's really only one person in this world that I can control, and that's me. And there's only one person in this world that can control me, and that is me. And I've got to learn to exercise some control over my spirit, over my temper, and over my tongue. We'll talk about in the third point. You know what an uncontrolled temper does? Let me just point this out. First of all, every one of us has a temper. There is not such a thing as a person without a temper. Are there things that make you angry? There are things that make me angry. Now, sometimes the things that make us angry are dumb things, to be honest with you. When we step back, we think about it. But it's not wrong to get angry. The Lord got angry. It was a righteous indignation. And we have to be careful, by the way, that we don't excuse unrighteous anger as being righteous on the basis of the Lord being angry with sin and wickedness. There's a difference in anger because God is disobeyed versus anger that is self-centered and selfish. That goes back to our first point. But I want you to think about what an uncontrolled temper does. If I don't get my temper and my anger under control, it acts foolishly. Proverbs chapter 14 and in verse 17. Proverbs the 14th chapter and in verse 17. A quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of wicked intentions is hated. In verse 29 of that same chapter, he who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly. You ever seen somebody with an uncontrolled temper? And you just sort of sit back and you think, what a fool they are. It's a lot easier sometimes to see when somebody else is playing the fool than it is when we're playing the fool. But what uncontrolled temper does, it causes us to do things and to say things that are foolish and stupid, and as a result of that, strife results. It abounds in transgression. An angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man abounds in transgression. In other words, you know what it'll do? It'll cause all kinds of transgressions. I tell you, uncontrolled anger has caused people to sin with their tongue. It's caused people to sin with their fist. You ever seen somebody that'll respond in anger and they'll haul off and they'll, you know, maybe you or I wouldn't do that, hopefully would. It's caused people to murder out of anger that is it abounds in transgression. It can lead to all kinds of wickedness. I've heard people through the years tell me stories of things that they've done in anger that just look foolish, and in the end causes them to sin. I knew a man one time who was a Christian that he ordered some bread from a health food store, and when he got it, it was the wrong thing. And he got so mad, he drove down and threw it all on the out in front of the store. Well, you know, first of all, he lost his money. Secondly, he looked like a fool in the process, and really sinned in so doing. When we don't have that controlled temper, that's what happened to us. I mean, you just consider all the sins that it can lead to, and how it stirs up strife. Proverbs 10 and verse 18. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 12, hatred stirs up strife, But love covers all things. In chapter 15, a wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. It just makes things worse. It's an outrageous and it's a torrent. Wrath is cruel and anger a torrent. And who is able to stand before jealousy? And I tell you what it does, it really leaves me vulnerable to the devil. In Proverbs chapter 25 and in verse 28, Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 28, whoever has no rule over his own city or over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. Now, to you and I, we don't come into Jonesboro now and there's not a big old wall around the city. And so we may not relate to that as easily as they would have in that day and time, but a walled city meant a city that was protected. And so when they would go in at night, they'd close the gates, and there was a wall there. It protected the city from outside invasion. And what this passage is saying is when somebody has no rule over their spirit, he's like a city that has walls that are broken down. One of the reasons that Nehemiah went back to the city of Jerusalem is he saw a city with all the walls broken down. That meant they were vulnerable to attack. The enemies could get there at any moment. And I tell you, when I don't have control over my spirit, what happened is that's the way I am. Spiritually, I'm vulnerable. Remember when the Apostle Paul said in the book of Ephesians, "Be angry and sin not. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil." I think what he's saying there is if you get angry at the wrong kind of things, or even the right kind of things, but it is out of control, the devil is going to go through that wall and he's going to take advantage of you. And he's going to get you under his control. And so I have got to learn to keep my spirit under control. And nobody can do that but me. I can tell somebody, I tell you what, you just have a way of just pushing me over the edge. Or you just say the right things to set me off. You ever heard somebody say that? But I tell you, ultimately, when I don't have control of my spirit, you know whose fault it is? It's me. I've got to do that. And nobody else can do it. And if I'm going to have the proper relationship with my friends that we'll talk about, or even my enemies, or the proper relationship with the husband and wife, I've got to learn to control my spirit. You know how important that is? You know what the value of a controlled spirit is? It's better than the mighty. You ever known somebody that puts a lot of stock in their physical strength? I know people that, you know, they work out and they take great pride in what they can lift. And but I tell you what, Proverbs 16, verse 32 said this, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." You know who the real strong man is, Proverbs is saying in 16:32? It's not the man that can lift a lot of weight. It's the man that's learned to keep himself under control. That's the real strong man. He's greater and more mighty than the most powerful military man. But I tell you, in addition to controlling my spirit, I've got to learn to control my tongue. It's our temper. I almost guarantee you that if you look back in your life and you think about the last times you really had trouble, it's going to relate back to one of two things. Either you didn't let your temper get out of control or you let your tongue get out of control. And with most of us, it almost is always those two things that get us in the most trouble in this life. And so in my relationship to self is I realize I've got a tongue, and that tongue can have a great impact in my life. How I use it is going to have a great impact as to whether my life is going to be happy or it's going to be unhappy, as to whether there's going to be a good impact upon others or whether or not it is going to be something that is going to continually get me in trouble. Look at some of these passages with me. I'm not going to look at all of them. Proverbs 13 in verses 2 and verse 3. "A man shall eat well by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the unfaithful feeds on violence. He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he opens wide his lips shall have destruction." Proverbs 21 and verse 23. "Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles." You want to avoid trouble? He said, keep a close eye on your tongue and your mouth. Look at Proverbs chapter 18 in verses 6 and verse 7. "A fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul." One more of a suffice on this, but Proverbs 18 and verse 21. "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." You can write down those other passages. Every one of them has to do with the tongue and how we use it. But what he's saying is this tongue is going to have a big impact as to how my life is going to be. It can either get me into trouble or it can keep me out of trouble. It can either lead to death or it can lead to life. I can either be fed by it in the sense that I am nourished by my tongue, or I can be destroyed by it. Now, how do I learn to use it in the proper way? Well, the tongue is a very powerful thing when it's used properly. That is, I can use my tongue in a proper way to calm anger. What does this tongue have the ability to do? Well, it has the ability, if I'll use it in the right way, to try to calm anger. Proverbs chapter 15. Proverbs chapter 15 and in verse 1 said, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. You know what this tongue can do? It can help to alleviate a situation. In other words, people start getting angry. Maybe we go back to that last point about not having control over our spirit. I can be in a situation where I can respond in such a way that I just make things worse by what I say. Or I can take this tongue and I can try to control my spirit and control my tongue and try to calm a situation and try to lay. That's a proper use of the tongue. It's sometimes contrary to what we want to do. I can use my tongue to disperse knowledge. In other words, I can use it to try to help and teach other people. The lips of the wise disperse knowledge, but the heart of the fool does not do so. In other words, I can take and I can use it to disperse knowledge. Take and teach people about the things of God. I can use it to rebuke sin. Try to help people. By pointing out there, not in an angry way, not ever in a delightful way, but you know what? Proverbs 27 and verse 6 says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. What that's saying is sometimes there are people in life that'll kiss you, and that means they'll say good things about you, but they've got some ulterior motive behind it. I mean, the Lord Himself was betrayed with a kiss. But there are friends, on the other hand, that'll take that tongue, and sometimes they'll say something that is hurtful. It hurt. It's a wound. They don't say it to be hurtful. Listen, they're not saying it to try to inflict pain. There's a difference in somebody that tries to say something to try to hurt versus somebody saying something to try to help, but it hurts when they hear it. You understand the difference? It might be much like going to the doctor, and this time of year, everybody's getting sick, but you go to the doctor, and the doctor may say, well, you know what? You need a shot for that. Well, he's giving you the shot. And it may hurt when he gives it, but it's with the idea of what? Of it helping to get you better. He's not just saying, here, let me give this because it's going to cause some pain. Sometimes friends say things to others that are hurtful, but they're said for the idea of telling them what they need to know in order for them to make their corrections in their life that need to be made. I can use my tongue to inflict those kind of rebukes that are helpful. He who rebukes a man will find more favor afterward than he who favors with the tongue. And I think that's what that's saying is, even though it may cause some temporary pain, later on, the one that has the right attitude will appreciate that. You can use it to encourage others. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 23, a man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. In other words, I can say things that are going to bring joy and happiness, and saying the right thing to the right person at the right time, oh, how good it is that it can make all the difference in their life. Can you think back in your life at times when maybe you were discouraged or you were down and somebody said something to you, and they may not have thought it was all that significant, but the words they did, they said, they encouraged you and they just made a difference at that moment in time. I can use the tongue in that way. You know what? Or I can, and when I use it properly, I tell you what happens. When I use it properly, for the sake of time, it's like a tree of life. It's like choice silver. It's like apples of gold and pitchers of silver. I mean, you think about all those passages that describe the beauty of what a tongue can be when it's used in the right way. It's a wholesome tongue as a tree of life, Proverbs 15 and verse 4, but perverseness and it breaks the spirit. Proverbs 25 and verse 11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and settings of silver. Proverbs 10 and verse 21, the lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of wisdom. The tongue, when it's properly used, that's what it can be. Now let me just say, when the tongue is not properly used, then it can do all kinds of things. We could spend an entire lesson, I guess, talking about the sins of the tongue if we wanted to. And sins that are found in the book of the book of Proverbs as it relates to the tongue. I can use my tongue to lie, Proverbs 6, 16 to 19. I can use it to be a talebearer. Talebearers are like tasty trifles, but they go down to the innermost parts of the body, Proverbs 26 and verse 22. By the way, the contrast, there's a contrast. I want you to notice the contrast between the talebearing and the rebuking. The rebuking, he said, faithful are the wounds of a friend. It hurts now, but it brings results later. Talebearing, gossip on the other hand, he said, is like tasty trifles. You know what that means? It tastes good now, but it inflicts pain later. It goes down into the innermost parts of the body and inflicts pain. So I can talebear, I can flatter, I can use angry words, or I can choose to use my tongue in the proper way. Is that easy to do? No, it's not easy to do. That's why James said, the Lord's brother said in James chapter 3, that the one that bridles his tongue in trouble, he's a perfect man, able to control the rest of the body also. But as we go on and we talk about relationships from here, as it pertains to wisdom in the book of Proverbs, I have to realize, if I'm going to have those relationships, I've got to humble myself. I've got to control my spirit. And I've got to control my tongue. And let me just say one other point very quickly from the book of Proverbs as it relates to ourselves. We must learn to be workers. In other words, we've got to learn some self-discipline. You know, play is fun, but too much play or too much laziness is a sin. Proverbs 25, verse 25, you wicked and lazy servant. And we have to learn self-discipline in the sense that we have to learn to be workers. We have to learn to be workers in providing for our family. We have to learn to be workers at home. And there are a lot of things that keep people from working that I think the book of Proverbs points out and that interfere with that self-discipline. Too much sleep. Proverbs 26 and verse 14 said, as a door turns on its hinges, so the lazy man on his bed. In other words, a door just turns on its hinges and doesn't do anything. A door never goes anywhere. And that's what a lazy man is. He just sits there and just turns on his bed. Too much sleep. Proverbs chapter 6 and verses 9 to verse 11 said, how long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. Too much sleep, too much time spent in rest can keep people from work. Is sleep important? Absolutely. We need it in order to be refreshed and able to work, but sometimes people can get too much. Too much talking. Proverbs 14 and verse 23, in all labor there's profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. He says there's profit in working, but when we're involved in idle chatter, that's a lot of talk with no work, then that leads to poverty. Too much talking can cause us to be lazy. It can be too much communication around the table at work. In other words, around the desk, instead of doing my work, I'm talking. It can be work that needs to be done at home. I'm too busy talking to somebody. Or I'm too busy communicating via social media and those kind of things. Nothing wrong with social media as long as it's managed in the right way. And I don't have an account of my own. I sometimes look on there and sometimes I wonder with regard to some people, some preachers I know, how in the world are they getting any work done? Because they're too busy communicating via social media. That too much talking on things like that, too much TV, they didn't have it in Solomon's day, but that kind of thing can take us away from work that needs to be done. Are those things wrong? No, not in their proper spot. But I've got to learn some self-discipline. Same thing can be true with recreation. There are things that are fun, and we need to take time to recreate. I believe that very firmly. Somebody that works and doesn't find time to relax, whether it's by ball or by hunting or fishing, whatever else they enjoy doing, is eventually going to become burnt out. It helps to refresh us. Those things are needed. Those things are needed. What one person likes for recreation, another person may not enjoy. But we all need to find what we need to do. But I take too much time and emphasis on that can take us away from work that needs to be done. Some people just have no motivation to work. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 24, a lazy man buries his hand in the bowl and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. That's pretty lazy, isn't it? Somebody get his hand in a bowl and won't even bring it up to eat. And I think that what that passage, you know, there's some people just don't have any motivation. And there are a number of reasons for that. You know, if you have a child whose parent is going to always take care of them and provide for them, sometimes they don't have the motivation to provide for themselves when they need to. If the government's going to step in and provide all that they need, then they rob sometimes men of motivation that they need to get up and to work and provide for their own. Now, the point is this. Part of my relationship to self is learning the discipline that it takes to get work done that needs to be done. And what happens if I don't do that? Well, there's poverty and hunger, Proverbs 6 and verse 11. It'll lead to me not having the things that I need to provide for my family, Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 11. So shall poverty come on you like powder, or like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. It'll put me under tribute to owe others because I can't provide for myself. And I tell you, it leads to unfulfilled desires. Have you ever noticed this? Lazy people like stuff just like other people do. You ever know, I've known some people that didn't have a lot of work ethic about them, and they'll sit back and say, I tell you what, I sure wished I could have that. They have all those desires that other people have, but they go unfulfilled because they're not willing to work to obtain those things. A proud and a haughty man, scoffer is his name. He acts with arrogant pride. The desire of the lazy man kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. In other words, he wants, but he can't get because he's not willing to work for it. And so that's what happened. Instead, you know what needs to happen? What needs to happen is we need to be like the ant. Proverbs 6 and verses 6 to verse 8. You never see an ant sitting still hardly, do you? They're always doing some work. They're busy. And that's why in Proverbs chapter 6 and verses 6 through verse 8, he said, go to the ant, you sluggard, you lazy man. Consider her ways and be wise, who having no captain, overseer, ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. You look at that ant. You see how that ant works? What he's saying, that's an example for you. And so the Bible, I think, has a great deal to say, particularly in Proverbs, about self and how important it is that I learn to view myself in the right way, get my temper and my tongue under control, and exercise self-discipline to get done what needs to be done. And I tell you, when I start having that kind of relationship to self, it's going to be surprising how well my relationship to others began to fall into place. And we'll talk about some of the wisdom in Proverbs about those in the weeks to come. Get your song book out. We're going to stand in just a moment. We're going to sing the song, There's Power in the Blood. If you're somebody here that's not obeyed the gospel, you need to take advantage of this opportunity and become a Christian. If you believe on the Lord, you're willing to repent of your sins, confess your faith in Jesus, and be buried in the waters of baptism, you can become a child of God. And if you remain faithful to the Lord, then you can have a home in heaven someday. Or maybe there's somebody that's obeyed but has wandered away and needs to come back. No matter what your need is, take advantage of this opportunity. Maybe the only one you have. So why not take advantage of it and respond right now? Let's get that we stand and we sing.